Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thanks for joining us. Today is September 18th, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast, and we appreciate you listening to us. And we want to thank our affiliates in Eugene, Oregon at kepw.org. We really appreciate you listening to us. Today we have with us what we call a Fuku fighter, Dave Parrish from Operation Save the Earth. He puts out an 8-minute video every Friday, 8 to 15 minutes every Friday on YouTube, and we call ourselves Fuku Fighter. So, Dave, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Lonnie.
Well, so I asked you to come on here because you were the only person who I'd heard who really picked up on something that intrigued me, and that was the fact that Russia said that Putin offered to help Japan, and Japan this time accepted. They had been turning them down since 2011.
Right. Yeah, this is a really kind of a seismic shift, and it wasn't really picked up by the mainstream media, certainly here in the West. But when they announced last week that President Putin was basically saying that they are going to work bilaterally with Japan to clean up the mess at Fukushima Daiichi, you know, this is the first time an international leader has really stepped up and said, yes, we are going to do this. So I think, you know, this is something that we can, at least I'm crossing my fingers on it, that we can look forward to as we go along here, because it's still a decades-long process that we're talking about, that the Russians can help out, and they're the ones who have expertise, at least some expertise in this type of thing because of the Chernobyl incident in 86. What is going to happen next is the big question.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. You know, this thing with Putin, when I looked into it, they offered immediately in 2011 to the Japanese government, and they said, no, thank you. So well, for them to accept it now in this kind of political time is kind of interesting. What'd you say, Dave?
Sure. I mean, why is it now that Japan's making this acceptance? And right. Why not back in 2011?
Right.
You know, it's really interesting. If you have you watched that new Godzilla movie that was produced in Japan last year, by any chance, Lonnie?
No.
Shin Godzilla. It was a huge hit over in Japan, and but got a very limited release here in the U.S., mostly because there's a little bit of U.S. bashing in the narrative. It's the first time that they've really had that in a Godzilla movie. But this movie, like the 1954 original, is a direct parallel to the Fukushima nuclear disaster. In 1954, it was a direct parallel to the atomic bomb droppings in Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the testing that was going on there at the time. Mm-hmm. So what in the narrative of this new Godzilla movie, they mentioned that China and Russia also reached out to Japan to assist with this, you know, big problem that they were having. And the United States basically was saying, no, you need to work exclusively with us on this problem. And that's what they were saying in the movie. And because it's such a close parallel to the real actual disaster, it's like, well, that seems pretty accurate to say because of what happened here with Obama's decision and the Clinton State Department's subsequent cover-up of what happened at Fukushima. You know, they want to keep it in-house as much as possible. And because the DPJ was in power in Japan at the time, during the initial releases in March of 2011, they just pretty much towed the party line, which is like, okay, we're going to go with whatever the United States says. Now, Shinzo Abe and the LDP, which is, you know, the more established political party in Japan, he has been working back channels with Russia almost since the jump when he first got into office, I think in what, 2013? And yeah. They've been, you know, going back and forth. Him and President Putin have been going back and forth about ratifying and finalizing a peace treaty deal, which they never really completed after World War II.
Wow. And then,
settling this dispute, these disputes for these islands that are north of Japan called the Kuril Islands.
Uh-huh.
And they've been like kind of just talking about what the solution is to get there, to get that done. And once that alliance, you know, becomes more firmed up, and we're seeing that more and more now, that opens the door for what Mr. Putin did last week. Now, back in April earlier this year, there was an announcement, oh, well, Russia's going to help Japan, and that was pretty much it. You know, RT reports it was like, and then that kind of goes away. And then, you know, like I said, you know, Mr. Putin comes out last week and says, oh, well, we're going to help, you know, and that's like a really definitive statement. And it's, I just think that, you know, what's going on with Russia and China in the back alleys, you know, the back rooms of what's going on in the greater geopolitical sphere, Russia is trying to get closer to Japan. Because they see, I know Mr. Putin's a controversial figure, especially with the anti-nuclear movement. Not everybody digs what he's trying to do, but I don't see any other international leader stepping up like this.
And what I found was peculiar is that Japan is now willing to accept their help, because in the early years, the Russians literally were constantly making efforts to reach out to them, and they were caught. And it probably has everything to do with the backdoor deal with the United States of no, thank you. Yeah. We're going to handle it on our own. Yeah. We'll send our own advisors. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, what have those advisors done?
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's interesting that it comes now in the era of Trump, because I think Shinzo Abe looked at Trump and went, what an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, they really, literally, there's looks on his face. You can see it. It's on camera that he has those sentiments, you know. And so maybe that's why I think this more signals a way that the world has abandoned the United States as kind of a world leader. It's like they're not looking to us for real, genuine help anymore because the United States can't give it, essentially.
Right.
They're not capable. Well, let's just be clear. No one's going to be capable enough to stop what's going on in Fukushima for quite a while. I mean, they did say it's going to take 30, 40 years to discover anything that will stop this for real.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I know.
They're wholly unprepared for this business.
Oh, completely. You know, and what's the big problem there, Lonnie? You know, TEPCO is still in charge? Really?
Right.
Really? After all these years and all the screw-ups, people dying on site, you know, subcontractors working there on site, getting sick, dying later. Why? Why would you let bad management continue to be in charge of the worst industrial accident in the history of mankind? What we really need is a truly international consortium in there, you know, doing the heavy lifting. You know, we need construction. We need engineers. We need scientists.
Yeah.
Can really look at the problem and analyze it and figure out a way around it, because this little piecemeal thing that TEPCO is going on, all it is busy work. I mean, you've seen it.
And you know, it's obvious.
Ice wall, the steel wall, all this stuff, you know, it's all garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the ice wall proved it. I think when I first started paying attention to this in 2012, I think 13 was the first year they talked about the ice wall. And when they started building it, they realized it was a complete wreck. It just basically mushed up the foundation. It was an impossibility to get the wall built because it won't melt. It's right. Too much heat.
Yeah.
It won't freeze. It just gets constantly melted. So it just turns the surrounding area into mush. And that's a reality. This idea that the ice wall is going to work is a fallacy because it's in a fissionable state.
Right. And I mean, let's take a look at it on a larger scale, too. I mean, nothing has ever been attempted on this large a scale and as far as freezing soil. They've never tried it in any type of mining project or anything like this where it's like a whole mile long, you know. And then the thing I always wonder is like, how are they going to just power this for whatever, apparently, right? Because you need to keep this basically frozen, this soil frozen for as long as possible to keep the water from escaping into the Pacific Ocean. You're going to power this, you know, ice wall for X number of what, hundreds of years? I mean, come on. The math on it just doesn't work. And then, you know, I was picturing in my mind when they first talked about the ice wall back in 2012, 2013, I was picturing something much bigger, you know, where they could really get the whole area, you know, frozen. But no, let's go with the cheapest little solution, sort of solution that they can come up with. And again, you know, tens of millions of dollars later, a couple guys died later. Here we have this thing that kind of works, but not really. So
Dave, you know, we ought to take this opportunity. And because I know you investigate Fukushima, the nuclear plants nonstop. Yeah. This is part of what your path is now.
Absolutely.
Why don't you enlighten our listeners as to kind of the current status of Fukushima Daiichi?
Sure. Well, you know, things are just as bad as ever. The thing that everyone has to keep in mind is that the worst of it all took place in March of 2011. Actually, all of that whole year. It was just spewing crap for months and months, and nobody really talks about that. But, you know, they have gotten it somewhat under control in the past 6 years. The site's a lot cleaner now, and they are putting some structures over, like reactors 1 and 3, to, like, reduce the amount of radiation that's going into the atmosphere. And maybe shore up a little bit of the structural integrity because reactor 3 is just a huge mess. But we're looking at just disastrous results of what they've been trying to do in as far as actual fixes go there. You know, in addition to the ice wall and the steel wall not being effective, you know, all the drones they've sent down have not been able to find any type of melted fuel. And, you know, the last one they sent down kind of found some drippings, but what's that? You know, that's not enough to say anything, really. You know, the muon scans, those radioactive scans that they used to look at things, didn't really show anything there. You know,
didn't they have meltdowns like they've blown up that corium? Those things have melted and gone away, right, into the river. Those plants are sitting on top of a river, correct? So.
Yeah.
They basically, if the corium had gotten blown up and melted and damaged, and the constant pouring of the water, it would have just fallen right underneath the river and gone out into the ocean, correct?
I would say so. You know, it's hard to know what corium does once it escapes the containment. But it seems to me that because it's like you said, it is sort of like this, you know, whole aquifer underneath there. It seems to me that a lot of that plutonium has already gotten flushed out into the ocean, and the currents are taking it sort of north and east of that area. And if you look at there's still a ban on fishing in that area. There's still, you know, IAEA readings of, you know, elevated cesium in that area. And it's like, hey man, you know, it's, this problem's not going away.
And it doesn't just stay in that area. That's the weird part. They say, oh, it's just that area. Well, we're talking about the ocean here.
Yeah, that's always the fallacy there, Lonnie. You know, oh, it's a localized problem. It's Japan's problem. It's a Fukushima problem. This is not something that affects the rest of the world. When the, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, we're talking about quadrillions of becquerels being released during the first year of this disaster.
Yeah.
And you're going to say this doesn't affect the rest of the planet? That's ridiculous. And when they came out with that study last year, the WHO, World Health Organization, saying, oh, well, basically everybody got one chest x-ray from this disaster, the equivalent of one chest x-ray.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? Really? When I see people getting cancer like it's the flu,
right.
I don't see chest x-rays giving people cancer like that.
And heart attacks. Younger people, right. Younger, older adults, younger people are having heart attacks, heart diseases, brain tumors. I mean, right now in my family, there's a distant relative who 21 years old with a brain tumor, lives in Boulder, Colorado. Have no idea why
right.
that happened to that person, but huh, how did
yeah,
that happen?
Yeah,
you know, he's
and
21 years old.
Baffled, right? Doctors yeah. are, they don't know what's going on. Come on.
That's right.
All this, you know, stuff. It's just ridiculous to me because, I mean, if you have eyes, it's just obvious, right? It's just obvious what's really going on. And, you know, you can sugarcoat it and, you know, stick your head in the sand all you want. But it's not going to change the fact that this is a real pressing danger. And, you know, I see all these commercials out yesterday while I was, you know, hanging out with friends, watching football. Oh, we need to stop childhood cancer. Really? How are you going to stop childhood cancer if we continue to live in the nuclear era? Because I don't see how the math works on that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Same thing with the diabetes epidemic. We know that, you know, low-level contamination, constant exposure causes diabetes. We know that. It's been proven.
I mean, the math is clear on everything that we're talking about. But, you know, they continue to try to press, you know, this false narrative and you know, paint this, you know, ridiculous-looking picture that everyone's supposed to buy. And I'm sorry, but my wallet is not opening for that one.
Dave, do you think they're really going to go through with the 2020 Olympics?
Yes. Yes, I do. I really do, because they've put so much into it now, even though they're way behind on actually getting things built and all that stuff. I mean, they are way, way behind right now. And I know it's a big point for Mr. Abe in Japan to have this happen and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's not just Japan that wants this, right? You know, the IOC is an international committee, right? So, you know, and they are, you know, in tangential ways wedded to the nuclear industrial complex as well, right? So if the whole narrative is to let everybody know that everything's fine in Japan and you guys – everyone should come visit during the Olympics. It'll be a big thing, blah, 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 blah. You know, then this narrative is going to continue, right? That's what they want. So even with Mr. Putin's announcement last week, you know, like I said, it takes decades to get this thing done. And for the next 3 years, at least, they want it to look like everything's normal. People are moving back into the radioactive areas and they're fine and everything's fine, blah, blah, blah.
Do you think that we're going to see athletes having heart attacks or problems with their bodies because they've gone there early to train and train in a radioactive area?
It wouldn't surprise me, to be honest with you. I just read a report yesterday about cardiac arrests being up in Japan by 20,000 over last year. I mean, 20,000 over last year?
Yeah.
Yike! Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Heart attacks are one of the things that we see an increase of when you've been exposed to radioactive contamination. One of the isotopes goes right to your heart muscle.
Right.
Exactly. I think it's, I don't know which one it is. I remember strontium, maybe, I think. No, that goes to your bones. I don't know.
Right. Cesium is the heart attacker. So
okay.
You got to watch out for that. And, you know, like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, some buddies training for soccer because they opened up soccer.
Yeah.
And right, and see, they just drop, and the watch that'll be covered up too. Or
well, wait till they have the surfers. They're having surfers go there early. You know, this is the first year they're going to have surfing in the competition.
What I would like to see is some athletes really be able to step up and kind of use
this as a platform.
Yeah, because it's there for them to do that, and. Now, I don't know if you noticed this or not, Lonnie, but I put up a posting a few weeks ago about a professional wrestler by the name of Low Ki.
Right.
He's a very popular wrestler with the Impact Wrestling promotion right now, and or GFW. And when he was in Japan a few years ago, he was a championship title holder, and they wanted him to wrestle in Fukushima for an event. And he did his research, and he said, "I don't want to do it." He knew that, you know, being there, he would be exposed to potential hot particles, you know, whether he was eating, drinking, breathing.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, "I just don't want to do that." And 6 months later, he's out of Japan. He doesn't hold that title anymore. He's back in the States.
Wow.
So, you know, the athletes, if they really pay attention, they should, there's a, like I said, there's a great opportunity here for them to either have a protest or try to raise awareness for this situation. You know, if I'm, you know, playing softball in Fukushima Prefecture during the opening rounds because I'm being forced to by the International Baseball and Softball Commission, then I'm like wearing something on my hat. I'm wearing something on my uniform, something, and letting everybody know. Or I'm wearing a face mask while I'm batting. I'm doing something.
Yeah.
You know, the people of Fukushima Prefecture know, hey, guess what? I know what's going on, and I stand with you.
Do you think that the athletes will have the where or the actual knowledge? Do you think that they will look into it enough on their own to understand?
I think it's really hard for them, you know, because obviously you're so focused on training. You're so focused. I mean, these elite athletes, they spend their whole lives to get here.
I know.
Right. And
that's what sets the betrayal, because if they choose not to participate this year because of where it's at, it could destroy their entire careers. If they go there, they could be exposing themselves to monumental disease in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And their children, not maybe not even them, but they could be passing it on to children and future generations unknown.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, this is something they need to be mindful of. I mean, as soon as it was announced that Japan was hosting the Olympics, that's the first thing as an elite athlete I would have done. Where is my event being held? How close is it to the actual dispersal map that, you know, still is effective today of all the radiation that was released from Fukushima? Because I would want to know that. You know, if I'm a marathon runner and, you know, this is what I do for my life, and I go to Tokyo and I got to run in hot particles, is it worth it to me? Is that something that's...
Well, you know, they're being told that don't worry about it, that people who talk about that are just hysterical. In fact, I've seen that in two or three articles from people like the guy from 350.org, the guy from National Environmental Legal Defense Fund,
sure,
who tell us that radioactive contamination isn't as bad as coal contamination, and that people who are worried about the health effects are just being hysterical. Hansen said that. I heard Hansen say that.
Yeah, well, you know, if we're being hysterical, I want to see what the actual definition of hysteria is in their
right.
mind, because I'm not seeing hysteria.
Well, this is the point here, though, Dave. We don't matter. What matters is the athletes and the people that live there and that are going there. Like, I've had, in the last month, I've had a friend of mine go, and then another one just went to Japan,
mm-hmm.
and insist that it's perfectly safe to eat the fish, to don't worry about the food, to travel. They have been more than assured by everybody that everywhere in Japan is perfectly safe.
Yeah, and that's the narrative, right? Don't believe the harmful rumors on the internet, right? Well, guess what? I got 2,000 verified links in the Operation Save the Earth pantheon that say that, guess what? This is not harmful rumor. This is fact, and this is reality. Now, you can listen to these, you know, other so-called experts who are pitching a narrative that is being sold to you. Or, like I said on the show, on the Fuku Friday show last week, Lonnie, you can listen to the Fuku fighters, the people who do this every day, the people who show up and do this every day, like yourself, like, you know, we all know who the usual suspects are in the Fuku fighters. They do it. They show up. They go and get the real data and share it with you. Anybody who says, you know, oh, you know, don't believe anything that's going on in Japan. Don't believe, you know, Fukushima's fake news, fill in the blank. I'm like, excuse me. Show me where your expertise is, because as somebody who's put my 10,000 hours in on this, I can tell you that what you're talking about is completely false. I think that's one of the things that really bothered me about the whole thing with Jay Cullen last week. You know, I mean, Mr. Cullen, I'm sure he has the best intentions for whatever his study is, and, you know, making sure that, you know, the fish is safe to eat and blah, blah, blah. But look at what the headlines did. They took what he said, twisted it to what the narrative was supposed to be, that, you know,
you— why don't you give us some background on
any kind of radiation? You're completely and 100% safe from this. That when that is complete misinformation, that's what the fake news about Fukushima is.
Hey,
this
Dave,
false narrative.
Why don't you back up and give some background on that story from Jay Cullen? Because I've actually talked to Jay Cullen about Carl Grossman, but why don't you give some historical background, a quick story on that story about who Jay Cullen is and what he wrote and what he just recently said.
Sure, and talk about a controversial figure in the anti-nuclear movement.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, Mr. Cullen is an associate professor at University of Victoria in Canada, and he started a study a few years back basically to test for radiation in fish and in the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, I'm not sure if this was some little project that he started there at school because somebody thought it'd be a good idea or whatever, because his specialty is like snails and rocks. He is an earth science guy, okay? And now all of a sudden he's this big oceanographer, like he's Jacques Cousteau, who knows everything. Yeah, okay, whatever. But he has been, you know, basically putting out this, you know, equivalency narrative where it's like, oh, well, everything's fine. What we're testing is fine. You know, it's below the accepted level and everything's fine, la, 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 la. Right? You know, it kind of mirrors what the NOAA studies have been saying. You know, oh, this is— – but it really— – all it really is cherry picking. What they're doing is they're taking a cross sampling of various fish from crowdsourced sources and, you know, just testing it, running through the spectrometer and seeing what it looks like. But, you know, what his study done is—
although they're never talking about the 100% positive testing of tuna.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Never mention that whatsoever. Right. What to me, the big problem that this whole thing is has created is Mr. Cullen has lost sight of the real picture. The big picture here, right? And it's like I talked about on the show last week. You know, your study is to just basically prove that fish are safe to eat and that the fishing industry is okay and that tourism should continue, when the reality is, you know, what you should have been studying is what the radiation was doing to the krill and to the phytoplankton and all the little fish that feed the big fish, because they're all dead.
Right.
Yeah, and with, you know, with no sardines to eat, why do we see species collapse across the board?
Exactly.
Why are orcas eating great white sharks in the Pacific? Because that's all that's left, is big fish eating big fish.
The coral is dead.
Oh, way too.
I mean, think about that. The coral forest is dead. The Great Barrier Reef is dead. For real.
Yeah.
That's huge. That did not just happen because, I mean, this is the thing, you know, I've said this before. This thing of calling it global warming is just making it sound good. What we're having is an environmental collapse, period.
Yes.
I mean, that's it. That's the reality. And it is caused by nuclear contamination. Fukushima has pushed us over the edge. We did have a lot of other stuff, including nuclear contamination prior to Fukushima, but Fukushima has just, in huge amounts, been pouring radioactive contamination into the air, into the water, into the soil. The little bit of soil that they have there is just, it's outrageous what they're doing. I mean, but Dave, you know, you've been doing this. You have a website called OperationSaveTheEarth.com. Is that the name of it? Yeah. You've been doing this, I know, for at least 4 years. I've been following you on YouTube. That's where I found you. And I would say I haven't really met you. You've been on my show a few times. But, you know, I feel like I kind of know you because I've watched you for so long.
That's great. Right? I appreciate that, Lenny.
But when you're out in your little neck of the world, which is in Arizona, are people even responsive to the idea that we've got to at least contact our elected officials? I mean, does anybody even give a half a breath to any of this?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think of it in the long term. here, Lonnie. First of all, you know, 90% of the population still really doesn't have a really strong grasp of the severity of the problem in Fukushima Daiichi, right? You know, they kind of sort of have maybe have heard about it and, you know it's maybe something they should be concerned about. This is something that has changed quite a bit over the past 5 years, because when I first started talking about it to people on the public in 2012, they just kind of looked at me funny, like, what are you talking about? Because it was so far removed from the news cycle that, you know, people just didn't have any idea, right? And that has changed over the past 5 years, especially because of what myself, what you do, what Kevin and Dana do, what everyone in the movement is trying to do, which is to keep this story alive in the news cycle.
Exactly.
The more people hear about it, the more they have an understanding about it. And their plan, the bad guys' plan, the powers that be, the nuclear village idiots, their plan was to sweep it so far under the rug that it would be completely forgotten about, like Chernobyl was. Right?
I actually love that about your videos. You call them the bad guys.
Well, they are.
The bad guys. They're the bad guys.
I mean, there's good guys, and that's us, you know, the intrepid few who hold the line, and there's the bad guys who are off playing golf and don't care about
us. So then this is the question. You see, I think this causes a lot of the dissension in our movement here is, if you're a good guy, like so-called Jay Cullen, who considers himself a good guy, and he keeps quiet about the bad guys, does that make him a good guy or a bad guy? See, I say he's a bad guy.
Right. I say he's a bad guy. I say he's a bad guy, too, because, well, for a couple reasons. You know, obviously what happened with Dana was totally, you know, just not right. I was really, really disappointed with how that all shook out. But, you know, when, like I said, you know, last week, he puts out a study, he says a few words, his intentions were one way, how it was taken and presented in the media was another way.
You mean Jay Cullen.
Here's the thing, you know, if I didn't see him correcting these headlines, I don't see him going, hey, you know, I didn't really say that, Huffington yeah. Post. I didn't really say never. No one's yeah. ever been exposed. In yes. fact, if you go to Mr. Cullen's Twitter account, you'll see that he's retweeted all of the links to all the different bad headlines.
Wow.
So that's not something that a good guy does, right?
Yep,
that's
I'm with you.
A bad guy does. What he does is, well, I'm propagating the myth. I'm, you know, letting everybody know that everything's fine. You know, Fukushima's fine. Go to Japan, eat another fish taco. Everything's fine.
That's well, not- look how long it took Jay Cullen to decide they were going to start saying there might be some radioactivity in the oceans. It took them. They went through several million dollars. Now they're independent, right? But they went through several million dollar studies to say to people, don't worry, there's no radioactivity. It's pretty good. Get back to business as usual. And then as that money ran out, they switched sides of the fence. I don't know. I mean, this is the... This is just the insanity of who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, Woods Hole is considered to be a very well-respected organization. And yet, yeah. they have
so
been co-opted.
But I don't see them stepping up to the Fukushima problem. You know,
I don't see any
about,
of them.
You know, some of these other, I mean, where's Greenpeace?
Right.
You know, they mention Fukushima maybe once a month in their newsletter. That's it. Where's the activists? Where are the people on the ground?
Right.
You know, Greenpeace in Japan, you know, they're trying to, you know, do stuff with grassroots, but, you know, where's the international appeal? I don't see it, you know, so, you know, just because you say you're a good guy and you're wearing those stripes doesn't make it so. Not always, especially when it comes to this. I mean, people need to understand the bottom line when it comes to Fukushima Daiichi and this nuclear disaster. This is the biggest problem that mankind has ever faced. And we are not even facing it yet.
You're standing
in the middle of a forest fire and you don't know what to do. Standing there just, you know, waiting for the fire to catch you is not a good plan. You know, you need
right.
a plan to...
That's not actually doing anything.
To, you know, save mankind, so...
Yeah, just saying that there's something there. I mean, I have to say, Dave, this is where it gets a little bit frustrating, and I understand why people give up. Mm-hmm. Because this issue with Fukushima has really shown us how out of control our government is. Barack Obama stood up there and lied to us straight-faced. Or maybe he was not informed correctly when he lied to us. You know what I mean? Maybe he was, maybe he naively believed it and found the truth out and never came out with it. I'll choose to believe that he was misinformed and then never told us the truth afterwards. But Hillary Clinton, for sure, we have seen proof in her White House, in her emails that have come out, that she knew. She told her staff to stay in. I mean, they knew exactly what this meant. There is no equivocation on this. In fact, Barack Obama did know, because he and his family went down south to South America for 3 weeks after Fukushima happened.
Yeah, and don't forget, Exelon was a major supporter of his initial run for presidency in 2008.
Right.
So, you know, if you have nuclear money backing you, no wonder there's a nuclear cover-up when something bad happens. I mean, and it pretty much wouldn't matter whether it was in Japan or whether it was in New Mexico or wherever.
It's true. You know,
they would have tried to do the same thing.
Well, they do the same thing. It would have been fine. They did. Look what they did do to WIP, WIPP, same thing. And look at what they do in Hanford.
14.
I mean, really, honestly. But then we have environmental groups like the Natural Resource Defense Fund, who literally worked with the state of Illinois to keep two leaking nuclear power facilities open.
Of course.
And when I called them and asked them, they said, well, that's because we believe that we need to shut down the coal plants and they're creating more of a problem than the leaking nuclear facilities.
You know, when people talk about, you know, President Obama still in such glowing terms, I always have to remind him that Fukushima happened on his watch and he did nothing.
That's right.
For this. Zero.
He did nothing but went to South America.
Yeah. And, you know, what should have happened is there should have been an announcement as soon as this disaster began that people on the West Coast especially should have shuttered for a number of days at least. We should have had real monitoring going on instead of, you know, the EPA shutting off the monitors. We should have had all this stuff that took place. And when Mrs. Clinton goes to Japan for 2 weeks and all of this stuff takes place, you know, we should have been informed about all of the things that took place there. Instead, you know, we got to read about it years later in books by Dave Lockbaum and stuff like that. Hear about it from the Fuku fighters who had to dig. And who've been, you know, basically castigated as a result ever since then. You know, we're the wrong ones. We're the wrong ones, really.
That's well, not you know why we're the wrong
that's
ones?
That's not how history
we call out the respected people. Like, we're willing to question why Jay Cullen is now saying things. Why it has taken even Dave Lockbaum. Dave Lockbaum is the reason that we have these half-inch thick containers. Mm-hmm. So this is where we get into this, like, who's on our side, who's not on our side, who's really telling us the truth. And the fact is, we shouldn't have to dig for the information. It should be readily available. And this should be a worldwide, a national, every country, for every country, this is a national emergency.
Yes.
I mean,
I 100% agree with that. And, you know, part of it is, you know, the scientific method says you can't really overreach and things like that. But the reality is, Lonnie, because the initial reportage of what the numbers were was so far off that, you know, I mean, in as far as like actual getting real, real numbers, it's taken like a long time for that to get out. You know, I remember back in the early days, TEPCO would say, oh, well, this amount was released. And then 3 months later, oh, we're sorry, we forgot a zero on that. So here's what the real amount was. Our apologies.
Yeah.
TEPCO did this so many times, you could almost, you know, count it as clockwork. Every 3 months they'd come out, oh, so sorry, we screwed up the numbers again. Really? Well, no wonder, you know, even scientists, even experts are like, you know, taking shots in the dark about this because they don't have the real data. Nobody has the real data. Nobody knows where the corium is. Nobody knows where other stuff. It you know, the horses left the barn a long time ago, and nobody knows where they're at.
See,
that's why even the best intentions by some people, you know, create these problems. So,
well, I think that's part of their MO, is like not collecting data and screwing up the data.
Yes.
Like, Like, honestly, I read the oral history by Dr. John Goffman conducted by the Department of Energy on my YouTube channel. It was the oral history of human radiation testing. And it was done, I think, in 1982, if I recall, or 89, by a woman at the Department of Energy. When she came in, she was shocked that to discover that all of the nuclear testing information, all the nuclear information was just disheveled in boxes in this office and that office. It had never really been adequately filed and taken care of. There was mounds of missing evidence. In fact, she did not find a single shred of a document that authorized anyone to test on human beings, and our government had been doing it. So she decided to go and talk to all the people of the Manhattan Project.
Right.
And I got a hold of his oral history, and I read it on my YouTube channel. And it is fascinating, the disregard that they have. In fact, that's their MO. They do not collect data, period. They pretend, but they don't.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me in the least, Lonnie, to be honest with you. I mean, this is, you know, very typical behavior that's gone on for decades now. Uh-huh. I mean, look at the nuclear testing that took place in the 60s. You know, were people informed about, you know, how much radiation was getting on their dinner plates? Not at all. Not at all. And that's, you know, we've just been, you know, these guinea pigs in this giant nuclear experiment box for a damn long time.
Was my intro say we're assets on a balance sheet, man? They think we're assets on a balance sheet. And speaking of radioactivity, did you see this guy, Organic Slant, on YouTube? He did a video. He tests, he gets old dishes and plates, and he had a plate that was so radioactive, it was unbelievable.
I'd believe it.
I mean, like anything that because they used to put thorium into glass for lenses. So any old lenses or a lot of the dishware and the plates after the 50s, they would, you know, rub it, put a certain type of radioactivity on it. So there is a lot of dishware. And in fact, that's one of the things about like thrift store, you know, and in fact, you need to test for lead. That's the other thing. Like, it is so shocking, isn't it, Dave, that we're living in this environment where we're like having to, you know, in the old days, you used to have to be aware of the animals and the elements. And now we have to be aware of manufacturers and corporations.
Yep. And you know what else used to be in the old days, Lonnie? It used to be that people didn't get cancer.
That's right.
People kind of whisper to each other about the big C,
because you know, or autism,
right? And you know, they didn't want, you know, to like kind of spread it around. They didn't want to put it in the air, you know, because it was such a rare thing and was so deadly. And now, like I said, you know, before, you know, it's cancer's like the flu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got three people in my immediate family, including my dad, who's on his deathbed right now, who have cancer.
Wow.
And it's like, gee, this was not a problem when I was a kid.
Right.
I didn't hear people, you know, getting cancer left and right. Certainly not in my family. Certainly not, you know, in my community. Not, you know, anywhere around me. And now it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And it goes back to the beginning of the nuclear era. It's to today. You can draw a straight line from then to today for the rise of cancer. It's the exact same thing.
It's true. And in fact, you can overlay the nuclear power plants with cancer centers. And you can see that if you put a map of where all the cancer clusters are that we have in the country and overlay a map of nuclear facilities, you'll see that there's really a direct correlation. So
no surprise. No surprise. It's just that, hey, guess what, Mom and Dad America? There are 40 million Americans are in direct path for nuclear radiation if something goes wrong at a plant in your area. 40 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen dispersal maps for potential disaster areas. And believe me, it's a lot wider than the 10-mile evacuation zone that they put around every nuclear plant in this country.
Well, all right, I will tell you what, everybody east of us ought to be prepared for when the Columbia Generating Station hits, because I'm south of CGS.
Yep.
And I'm a little bit west, so I actually won't get the fallout first. Who will get it? Idaho, Montana, Utah, and it is going to be big because the Hanford thing, it's such a complete wreck up there. It's unbelievable.
It is. And I'm like, people, you're not going to be able to move back there. Your government's going to tell you, oh, it's fine. Go ahead and move back. That's what they did in Japan. That's what they're doing in Japan right now.
Right.
Right. The only ones moving back are the elderly because they're smart. They know that, well, you know, the cancer will probably kill me in 10 years. I'll probably be dead before then. So the only ones moving back are elderly. Right? Is that what you want, Mom and Dad America? Is that what you want, you know, to have these radioactive areas here in the United States that you cannot move back into, your kids cannot live in?
Seems the to people me, of Fukushima must feel so betrayed by their government at so deep a level, because not only did they, you know, they were sold a bill of goods about how safe these places were, but they were also sold a bill of goods that if something happened, we will take care of you. And now they're being told, you know, all the guilt, all the shame, all the social stigma to now being a survivor of Fukushima. It's a really, I mean, and if people think that that can't happen here, it can.
And just this is people in Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, where's the there should have been a huge mobilization in Texas from the entire National Guard. And I mean, every resource in this country should have been poured into Houston. And said, what does Trump do? Oh, you know, I'll go swing by and see if any of the golf courses are open. Really? Really, sir? You're not helping. You know, and that's the thing. You know, we talk about good guys and bad guys, Lonnie. Either you're helping or you're not. It's that simple. You know, if your intentions are not helping in the greater scheme of things, then you're a bad guy. I'm sorry. You know, you may look the part, but you're a bad guy. Okay.
So are you hearing that Houston is not being recovered properly?
What's that?
Are you hearing that Houston is not being recovered properly?
No. Yeah. I've heard that on many, many, many fronts. You know, just how the whole thing was handled, how it's been handled since. Oh, I mean, it reminds me of what happened in New Orleans with Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a big mess that, you know, was not handled the right way when it should have been handled in the right way. And like you said, you know, if you're going to put all your faith in the powers that be in the government, guess what? You know, I learned a long time ago, back in 2011, when I sent emails to the White House and tried to tweeting Michelle Obama about Fukushima, that we are on our own.
Yeah, brother.
We need to take care of each other.
Yeah.
That is the big point right there, right? We have got to step up and be there for each other. That's what Fuku fighters do.
Mm-hmm.
We're for each other. And I know we've had our fights. We've had our disagreements. Not everybody's on the same page with everything with Fukushima. I get that. But we're all showing up. We're all doing the work. And we're all, in the grand scheme of things, helping each other, trying to help the global community to get past this, to get around this, to get through this, because we have to.
Well, to get the governments to really put their resources into it. That's the shocking thing about Putin deciding that Shinzo Abe accepting Putin to coming in, especially they have been leaning on the United States. And then I think it has a direct relation in a direct correlation to Trump being elected, the rest of the world getting their nerve up to give the finger to the United States. It's, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like
no doubt.
They basically have just like, you got to be kidding this. And I mean, just the bravado that he has done, he has really harmed our reputation. Although that might actually be a good thing in terms of Fukushima, to have some other country who will still cover it up. But at least in Russia, they have had massive experience and they have really poured real money into it to try to make it work.
Yes. And I mean, like I said before, don't get me wrong. You know, Mr. Putin has had a very spotty record when it comes to nuclear issues.
Right, he's pro nuclear.
He's a shareholder with Rosatom.
Yeah, he's a pro nuclear.
They're still trying to sell nuclear technologies to India and other countries. So you know, he's trying to have it both ways, really. But you know, I will take that. I mean, let's say we label Mr. Putin as a bad guy just because he's selling nuclear technologies, right? But what is he trying to do for Fukushima? He's trying to, you know, alleviate the situation by, you know, giving real money, real expertise, real resources to the problem. I'll take that.
I think he really wants some of that Mox fuel, if there's any. If you don't, Dave, if you don't mind me injecting, I think he really wants some of that old Mox fuel, if there's any left.
I mean, want that crap.
I think there's some things that he might get in exchange for. I mean, that's kind of what's raised my ire, is we're talking about an attempt to decrease nuclear weapons, and here's Trump saying, you know, Trader Trump saying, we've got to, like, increase our nuclear weapons. And Obama even was saying it. Like, we've got to, like, put money into our nuclear arsenal. And then Putin comes into Shinzo Abe, who has all this supply of nuclear fuel at the other nuclear power facilities that are shut down where they could sell their stuff. Do you get what I'm saying? There's a lot of material sitting in Japan that's quite... could give them a lot of money if they started selling it off.
Yeah, but you got to keep this in mind, Lonnie. Who's buying? The stock price on uranium is in the toilet. There are, like I said, hardly any new rebuilds. And how are you going to repurpose, you know, even mixed oxide plutonium? What are you going to do with that? You know, weaponize it? You know, just because the United States military does it doesn't mean that it's a good idea. You know, and you can probably make some money off of it, but like I said, long term, it does not really suit your big needs, I don't think. So I think that's just a bad strategy right there. You know, there's so many other ways to go about this whole thing when it comes to the nuclear aspect. And it, you know, this has been part of my narrative too the whole time. I've been trying to convince Wall Street, and doing so successfully, that, you know, this is old tech that we're talking about. Why are you investing in old tech?
Yeah,
it's like saying, hey, you know, I'm going to start putting my money in 8-track players because I think they're going to make a comeback. Really? You're the only one that thinks that. Okay.
Well, even think Heidi Lambert said this on the show one time. Think about it. It's 19th century idea using 20th century technology that was never perfected and never really worked. Like, the idea of turning a wind turbine comes from the 19th century.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's like, what? And then the technology we use is really so limited compared to what we have today.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really, and it's true. I've seen more articles saying that nuclear is not the path, this is not the deal. But the fact is this, even if we turned everything off today, we still have a nuclear industry that has to do something with the waste.
Exactly. I mean,
they have to figure out a way to fix this, how to remediate it. I actually saw a story the other day that said scientists have come up with a way to isolate radioactive nuclear waste and to reverse it, to still it and turn it back around, which I can believe. I mean, we know that phytoremediation works. We know that that will detox the planet, you know, so that is one thing. And then there's sound, where they can reverse it through sound. So who knows how they're finding it, but that has, in the meantime, we have to be able to, like, continue as a species.
you know what I mean? And that's the thing, we're on the clock. You know, we don't have a lot of time left on this. I mean, eventually the nuclear apparatus will wipe us out if we continue to allow this. I mean, think about it. I mean, we're saber rattling with North Korea right now. Trump is, you know, and all he's really trying to do is sell arms to Japan and South Korea. That's all this really is. Because as dumb as Trump is, and don't get me wrong, this is not the brightest bulb in the pack. He knows that customers are good for business. That's business 101. And if you kill all your customers, then you ain't got no more business, right? So here's what you do. You threaten North Korea. North Korea threatens back. And, oh, wait, they're North Korea sending missiles up. What do we do? Hey, South Korea, you want to buy some more missiles from us, don't you? Hey, Japan, you need some, you know, preemptive missiles, you know, on Hokkaido Island, don't you? That it's just money. It's just money when we're dealing with, you know, the population of the planet. We're dealing with life itself, you know. And the thing I've not yet been able to figure out, Lonnie, is, you know, we're constantly in this war mentality, and we're blowing stuff up, we're blowing people up, we're blowing ourselves up all the time. And I have not been able to figure out why. Because why are we doing this in real time? We have Xbox and PlayStation 4.
Dave, have you seen that?
All day. We can do this all day to each other in a virtual space and not harm a soul, not harm an ant, not harm a tree, not harm any living thing that's out there.
It's profitable, Dave.
Figured out that we have virtual space to do this in now, and you know, fulfill our you know, whatever crazy fantasies that we have about blowing each other up. We can do that now. Now, our generation figured out how to do that. This is the older generation. They're still stuck on not just old tech ideas, but old ideas about let's kill each other. It's stupid. I don't get it.
It is stupid. Have you seen the documentary Tough Guys?
I have not.
It's Tough Guys, G-U-I-S-E. It is worth watching. It is why we do it. It's really, it's about power. They want to be, they want to have the control of sending a population. I mean, for them, war is profitable, and it's a win-win situation. So this is the deal. It keeps us docile. It keeps us quiet. The more desperate we feel, the less we're likely to stand up until it gets really bad. That's why they militarize the police. They know that. Read Alan Greenspan. He talked about it. His whole idea, this is all Alan Greenspan's idea. Destabilize institutions, privatize everything, have a militarized police because people aren't going to like it.
Yeah.
And it's quite profitable for them, and that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, but profits only get you so far. And what, you're going to stick with this business model where it's military, 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 military? We've been doing that for 40 years now. There was a brief time in the late 70s where America was not at war with anybody. That has not been the case for almost 30 years now.
A long time.
Yeah, a long time. And, you know, people get war weary. I don't know anybody who's like, oh, well, let's start a war. And the CS thing, we don't declare wars anymore, do we?
Right, no.
You know, we're just, oh, we're going to have military operation, or we're going to give, you know, missiles and money to Saudi Arabia to bomb Yemen.
We spend most of our budget on the military. I'm at more than 50% of our budget, and we have not declared a war for our national interests, which means their stuff. We want their stuff so that we... See, this is the thing. I mean, this whole idea about Fukushima has made us recognize that we have been off balance, and we have got to look at the reality of how we've been living and what our real values are. Because the idea that we needed nuclear power plants is a lie in the first place. We didn't need them.
Never did.
If you're only getting 10%, you can do without 10, 20%. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is.
And so
it's just in nuclear power industry. The only future you have is in waste management. Learn how that works.
Right.
Okay, because that is your only way that you're going to be making money for the next 10,000 years. Because that is on you. That's you to fix. And if you don't, like I said, it's just going to be too bad. Because what we really need to concentrate on, Lonnie, is getting that next generation savvy about what this whole thing was about. Okay? Because they're the ones that are going to have to do the heavy lifting on this. They're the ones that are going to have to, you know, find ways to make this.
Well, we're going to have to really make them aware that this is more of a problem than they thought. We've got 30 seconds left, Dave. This has certainly gone fast. I hope you can come back with us again.
Always a pleasure, Lonnie. Whenever you need me, let me know.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for listening to us. You've been listening to Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show with Dave Parrish from OperationSaveTheEarth.com. Put your courage feet on, you guys. It does matter. Take action. Your voice matters. It really is important that every one of us take the action that we're feeling called to do. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.